Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist. Join me as I seek out the small incremental changes being applied in other industries that we can learn from and that can be applied in healthcare. Can these changes bring immediate value, but also add up to the big improvements and revolution we need in healthcare? Come along with me to explore the possibilities. My innovative guests from around the globe have used small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Dr. Falgun Choksi. He is a neuroradiologist and also a host of his own podcast, Looking Around the Corner. Falgun, thanks for joining me today.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here, and thank you for the invitation.
So if you could, tell us a little bit about you, your background, how you got to this position, how you ended up in neuroradiology.
Yeah, no, thank you. So I'm a medical doctor by training. I decided to specialize in the field of radiology, which is the interpretation of different types of imaging related to the body. I did a further subspecialization at Johns Hopkins Hospital in neuroradiology, which focuses on the detailed interpretation of anatomy, image, and pathology, diseases related to the brain, the spinal cord, the spine, the head, and neck, predominantly in adults, but I do have experience diagnosing the same diseases in children and infants. I've always been intrigued by the by neuroscience, and I was a behavioral neuroscience major at the University of Florida as an undergraduate, and so this was a natural extension of that that inquisitiveness, and that's been my my job for many years now, and I really enjoy it. Lately, I decided to get more involved with learning about the uses of technology as they relate to healthcare and especially neuroimaging and neuroscience. And so I've become more interested on the health tech and health healthcare innovation front as well.
Fantastic. So one of the things that strikes me immediately, especially when I talk to radiologists, is that of all the domains that I think we're seeing an impact from technology, particularly around, I say AI, but I use that term sort of broadly. So it's not just artificial intelligence, it's augmented intelligence. But of all the domains, what I think we've seen is, an incredible acceleration of the application of some of these technologies in that space. And, obviously, as you've entered into this domain and, you have a specialization, I'm curious to know, what's your take on this whole AI? What does that do to the radiologist? How do we sort of blend these two worlds together, as we start to see all of this technology doing things that, used to be done by people?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's one that has actually been talked about a lot in a lot of different circles, both in the lay media and as well as the, as well as in academic and industry circles. I think, the way I look at it is that I'm a little bit of a contrarian to the view that this technology is going to replace or disrupt us as a specialty, because what we do is very nuanced actually as radiologists. And I think a lot of it's just lack of knowledge of understanding what radiologists really do. And what we do is basically we are imaging specialists, of course, but what we are really doing is we are putting together multiple disparate pieces of information and coming up with an overall gestalt of what it may be going on or what's going on in the patient's body, what are the different causes, potentially even recommending treatments or follow-up. So I think there's a role for technology such as, for example, artificial intelligence or other modalities, other techniques to help us become better, meaning more accurate, help our workflow improve, help us impact outcomes, et cetera. But I don't think it's really a good business proposition, honestly, to try to replace us, because anyone who's ever had an imaging study done or has been in the hospital in the last few years has realized that, at least in the United States, that you will get imaging here. And it drives a lot of decisions, whether we like it or not. And I have a feeling that this technology, if done properly, can actually be a lot of benefit if we benefit the radiologists in the way they do their work. I think replacing us may have a lot of bad consequences, many of which are probably unintended, but I do hear a lot of hype about that.
Yeah, so to be clear, I don't disagree with you at all. I think, you know, this concept of complete replacement, I think one of the things that medicine and healthcare in general has done poorly is augment the existing highly skilled resources with technology. What they've tended to do is to impose technology that sort of replicates existing process. And, you know, that hasn't gone terribly well. I think one of the challenges that we have in healthcare is, you know, this huge amount of data that we're processing. And radiology is a perfect example of that. You know, go back long enough and you had, you know, 16. Now, I've lost count of what the slices are, but that's more and more data to review, processing that. And my sense of this is really, it's why I choose words around this carefully. And I think it's augmented intelligence that's applied. And I'm wondering what's been your experience? You know, you're practicing, you're looking at images. How much of this is coming to bear today? Or is this just all discussion and, you know, we're really still waiting for that impact to arrive?
Yeah, I think, you know, in my practice, and I think a lot of people are in the same boat as far as what they're seeing is, I think that there is a big difference between a lot of the chatter that's out there in, you know, many different spaces about the promise or the prediction or the magic of AI and similar technologies and what we actually do on a day-to-day basis. I think with the exception of maybe a few places around the world that may be experimenting with utilizing AI-related algorithms for specific use cases in their practice or maybe as a, you know, like a pilot project or whatnot, I think for the most part, most people are not seeing much in the way of how this is really helping them. Mm-hmm. I do know that imaging vendors, such as PACS vendors and information system vendors and as well as electronic health record companies, I know they're exploring the way that they could integrate this technology into particular aspects of their overall product offerings. But I think what it is that it's sort of like we're in that wave of the hype cycle that, you know, that Gartner has on their famous, technology adoption or AI adoption or dissemination graph. And I think we're really at the peak of the hype. I have a feeling that it's going to take a while for the average person to go to the average medical practice or radiology practice and really say, aha, I see exactly where you're using this stuff. Cool. It may be a few years, it may be a little earlier, but I think we're a little while off though.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And you know, as you think about it, so you live in the trenches. You know, I'm willing to bet without asking you that you don't have enough time. There's too many cases, too much work to do, you know, constant pressure for production. If you think about the existing technology, so, you know, I think there's been a lot that has improved things. Obviously, PACS has changed things, you know, digital imaging, you know, a lot of that. But, you know, as you think about some of the workflow problems and the challenges you have today, what is there anything that really stands out to you that would make a big difference you wish was there or you think is maybe on the way or what is it that's really painful to you in terms of that practice that you think technology could come and apply and provide some solution for you and for your colleagues?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's an excellent question because this is stuff we complain about every day. And really, you know, the thing I find amazing in healthcare settings, and I've been in a few in my career, so this is not representative of any one, is that we deal a lot in inefficiencies. And when I say inefficiencies, I'm not talking about, how do we make humans work more or become more productive? Because you know, this has already been shown that, you know, you can only make people so productive before you sort of get diminishing returns. But what I'm talking about is the opportunities for automation, and I like to, I mean, I don't know if this is a term, but my term is what I call iterative automation. And by that, what I mean is like, there are so many processes, and you know, our industry, just like many industries, is a process-driven industry. There are workflows, there are, you know, certain types of value chains and supply chains, and a lot of these things that happen, they happen with such large variances. To say that on any given day, how much time is a person wasting, for example, you know, trying to make phone calls? How much time do we waste trying to make sure that the IT system is working? How much time do we waste on searching for the history, you know, of the patient to figure out why we're even getting the imaging? I mean, you know, to me, and I'm an optimist, and to me, I look forward to the day where I can just speak into a microphone, or I can interact with a digital assistant right on my, you know, on my workstation or through a VR headset, and I'm just talking and it's getting me that information where I'm not actively going to try to get a bunch of info. I'm not sitting there, you know, wasting time doing things that machines could do for me. And right. I feel that's an opportunity in healthcare, mainly because we deal with a lot of disparate data systems and silos and reservoirs. And to be honest with you, it was never set up that well. The IT infrastructure was not really ever funded that well. Hospital administrators historically, you know, didn't really put it, you know, put that as like job one to say, listen, we really need a great infrastructure because we're not going to get, you know, we're not going to get less busier. We're going to just keep getting more busier. So that level of vision, which I think a lot of tech companies have, which a lot of other industries have to have, such as in manufacturing, such as in, you know, retail and marketing, especially, we lack that. And I really wish someone or a group of people would come and try to help us change that aspect of it instead of saying we're going to replace this doctor versus that doctor.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And I think, you know, I like that, the iterative efficiency is very much in line with, you know, my particular area of passion and sort of focus, that incremental approach. It's, you know, those small steps that move us towards that. And, you know, what I think you're describing is a lot of the scut work, as we used to call it. You know, all the stuff that's really not about focusing on the patient, the care of the patient, clinical decisions and so forth. So, yeah, no, I agree. Absolutely. I want to just float one other thing before we jump into another area that I just found really intriguing, and not enough time to sort of cover the detail, but perhaps you can just trust me in terms of the technology. But I saw a fascinating presentation that essentially suggests we might be getting to the point of a portable MRI that you can wear as a cap on your head. And to be clear, the cap would be lighter than the current virtual reality headsets that people put on that are pretty substantial in terms of weight, and has resolution down to the level of the neuron, and at a very cost-effective level. Fascinating sort of concept. It may be a ways away, but as you think about that sort of, you know, potential, and particularly as you sort of blend some of the things that you've got in your background with behavioral neuroscience and, you know, understanding of the brain, how do you think that's going to impact, you know, our understanding?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you mentioned this. I don't know of a particular company or anything that's doing this necessarily. I have an idea maybe of what you're talking about, but let's just say completely hypothetically here. This is actually a conversation I had with a friend of mine who is an advisor to NASA's iTech incubator program. Basically what I'm trying to get at is the impetus for making these type of very smaller, miniaturized versions of these, you know, gargantuan 2-ton, 3-ton machines that we use is going to involve a need and a vision that literally transcends this planet. And by that, what I mean is space exploration. Right. And the connection there is this, is that you can't haul a multi-ton machine up into space. to do scans of people. I mean, even an ultrasound machine, in and of itself, maybe the only really small portable thing, but that has its own limitations, obviously. So the way I look at it is, would I like to see a day where we can just go into a clinic or into someone's home and be able to do an MRI, but putting some type of a cap-like or VR-type device over their head and see, oh, hey, did this patient have a stroke, or does this patient have something that they need to go to the hospital for versus they don't? That would be revolutionary. I mean, literally, it would be revolutionary. But I think the way this is going to come about will not be by the traditional healthcare industry. I think it's going to be a need for example, things that are way more ambitious, like the mission to Mars. Because at the end of the day, people that get sick here are going to get sick in space too. People that get strokes here are going to get strokes in space. So my challenge really to the founders out there who, you know, are truly wanting to make a difference and truly disrupt things, look to space. Don't look here at Earth, because you look to space, you're going to start really thinking differently, because you can't take these machines up with you. And at the end of the day, I'd love to work on that, you know, that kind of thing, because I feel like that's the next iteration of the technology. You know, it's the, you know, the very cliche analogy of, you know, stop making better horses or more popular horses or more powerful horses, you know, work on the Model T. And that was the, you know, that completely disrupted, and to the betterment of society, it disrupted an entire paradigm.
Right.
And I think that is what, I mean, I'd love to see it. Don't get me wrong. I'd love to see it. I just don't think it's going to happen anywhere close to our normal healthcare ecosystem.
Yeah.
It's going to happen because there's going to be a demand that comes from a completely separate need, completely different market. And I'd love to see it in my lifetime.
Fantastic. So for those of you just joining, I'm Dr. Nick. I'm the Incrementalist, and today I'm talking to Dr. Falgun Chokshi. He's a neuroradiologist and host of the Looking Around the Corner podcast. So we were just talking about space. Falgun, you're clearly a space nut like I am. I'm not sure I'd quite still be at the same point that I used to be many years ago, where if somebody had knocked on the door, you know, right now, literally, I'd drop the microphone and walk out and say, yeah, I'll come to space anytime. I don't know that I'm quite at that point anymore in my life, but it's certainly one of the areas, and it huge inspiration for me and many of my generation. So I'm excited to hear you sort of talking about it in that way. If we could just flip a little bit, you and I spent a little bit of time getting to know each other around intermittent fasting, and I know that's something that you've certainly explored. Tell us a little bit about that, if you can, what it is and what your experience and your thoughts are about it.
Sure. No, I'd love to. You know, intermittent fasting was something that I, like many people, probably heard about, you know, recently as, you know, a means of, I guess, dropping a few pounds and getting healthier, and that it has apparently other health benefits that are, you know, that are somewhat contentious. But at the end of the day, I got turned on to it by a friend of mine who, honestly, in my opinion, didn't need to, you know, he wasn't a heavy or obese individual or a large individual, but you know, he just wanted to really just become more toned and muscular. And he's like an athlete, and he used to, you know, play basketball before. And essentially, he wanted to do it for his health. And so he convinced me. He's like, you know what, you should try this. And he explained how he was doing it, what he read up on it about, you know, fasting 16 hours and you can eat for 8. And, you know, and as a physician, as you can imagine, you know, we're very skeptical by nature. It's, you know, we're very, you know, you have to really convince us about things, especially when it relates to, you know, people's health and all that, because, you know, there's a lot of people there that are just selling snake oil still to this day. They just call it something different. But I said, okay, you know what, I'm going to give this a try. This doesn't involve anything other than my own willpower, frankly, and an adjustment. And I used it as a sort of a, I don't know, like a test to see how much willpower I have. So it was more of a way to understand what exactly can I can I do with something where I'm not eating when I want to or eating what I want to sometimes or whatnot. And you know, I've struggled throughout my life with having an appropriate, you know, weight and being able to, you know, be the person that goes into the store and that can just put on, you know, can wear anything, you know. I think, and so I said, let me try it. So I tried it for a few months, and it was very beneficial. I shed weight and whatnot, and I felt healthier. But I will tell you, one of the hardest things about it is really the consistency. It's one of the things that, you know, if you do it as a fad, it's just like that. It's a fad. It becomes very difficult to do. So I realized that what I needed to work on was, it wasn't the intermittent fasting. It was my own conviction to stick to something. So what I realized, it was more of a lesson about how I made decisions and stuck to them.
Interesting. So I've, you know, slightly different approach, but certainly, you know, some common threads. And I've certainly had positive experiences. I've actually found in some respects, it's a lazy man's version of dieting in its simplest form.
Very much.
Reduces your calories by 1/7, assuming you don't, you know, overeat either side of the, you know, the period of time that you're fasting for. What I found particularly fascinating, and like you, you know, very dubious of, you know, current fads and so forth, but there was certainly a lot of historical context to it, and even science that talked about the sort of shock is maybe the wrong word, but you know, the impact on your body of sort of starving it, even if that's only a relatively brief period of time, to sort of impact in terms of immunity, you know, improves immunity, improves sort of, you know, general well-being, albeit some of certainly the well-being could be, you know, placebo effect. Any sort of thoughts around any of that that you've seen or heard or read about that you feel is relevant?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I've heard similar things. And you know, and I should, you know, I guess being two physicians talking about this, your listeners should know that none of this is medical advice, of course, but this
Absolutely.
Is just the people talking about their experience. That my experience is, I looked it up. I did a PubMed search, and I tried to look up, you know, whatever I could as far as, you know, what has been really done out there on this. And there was some very interesting studies and interesting commentary related to the fact that, yes, starvation states seem to have potentially like an evolutionary sort of, you know, foundation. And, you know, there were times when our ancestors just couldn't get food for days. And, you know, so the body essentially has a starvation mode that is, as long as you're not starving to the point of like cachexia, you know, there's certain mechanisms that come into play to sustain you. And I feel like, I'm not saying whether it's completely truth or not, but I would say that I feel that there is a benefit. And if it's a placebo effect, I'm sure there's some aspect of the placebo effect in there, just because it's something you're committing yourself into. And you're going to say, you know what, I know other people have lost blah, 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 this many pounds with it, or this is how it is. I see the change happening in other people. So if I copy this, and if I do basically what they're doing, then this should work for me. So I don't know how much of that exactly is placebo, but you're right. It's an accounting thing for weight, in a sense, calories in versus calorie out. And like you say, yeah, it's a lazy person's way of, dieting or cutting calories. And to be honest with you, I was never much of a breakfast eater in general. So it didn't really bother me that I didn't eat breakfast. You know, some people, they're like, I need breakfast and I have to have three meals a day or whatever it is. I never really had that problem. And so what ended up happening was I found it the most difficult, the last hour to 2 hours of the fast. It was extremely difficult to not just say, oh, forget it, I'm just going to eat an apple or something, you know? And I think that last few hours is actually the key, which is what makes it very difficult, at least the way I was doing it. So I agree with you. I think there's probably benefits. You know, to have a low insulin state for a long time and to, you know, not continuously just keep devouring calories and probably, you know, processed and sugary foods, which is what our, at least our Western society, some Eastern societies are basically gone to, right? Very, very difficult to, you know, it's more expensive to eat healthy in general, because it's so easy to buy cheap, bad food. And as physicians, as you know, there are times where you're going through a lot of stressful period because of work, or and I'm doing an MBA currently as well. And so, you know, it's not like anyone gets an extra hour in the day for what they do. So I think a lot of it is just is behavioral changes.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important.
Fantastic. So unfortunately, we're out of time. It just remains just to reemphasize, not clinical advice. Important to understand we're both, looking at this, as general population. I think it's interesting. The science is definitely not proven, but I think it's fascinating. I always like to explore these things and try and understand them a little bit better from other people's perspectives. So appreciate your insights and your insights on radiology. So it just remains for me to thank you, Falgun, for joining me. It's been great having this conversation. So thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you, Nick, and I appreciate the opportunity and hope your listeners enjoy the interview.
Thanks for joining me today. Do you have any better ideas, or have you found a small incremental change that's brought about a big improvement in your world? Let's continue the conversation on our hashtag, TheIncrementalist, or share with me at DrNick1 on Twitter. You can find more information about the show on our program page at healthcarenowradio.com. And tune in next time to hear my discussions with leaders and innovators from around the globe who've revolutionized their space by using small incremental improvements to achieve their moonshot. I'm Dr. Nick, the Incrementalist, and I'm starting a revolution through evolution.